and you're listening to WBAI in New York, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. After Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton for the presidency of the United States this week, Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein took to Facebook. She spoke first about what she would do as president, and then she took Facebook questions. She says, if the political elite bailed out Wall Street, isn't it time then to bail out young people who are the victim of that waste, fraud, and abuse on Wall Street? Jill Stein.
Young people who are locked into predatory student loan debt. And the good news is that this doesn't have to go through Congress, because it's the Federal Reserve that actually has the power to cancel that debt. And that's how they bailed out Wall Street. And it's the chair of the Federal Reserve that's appointed by, guess who, the president. So by coming out on Election Day, millennials and student debtors of all ages can take over this election and win it, not just to cancel student debt, but to make public higher education free. And it pays for itself, because every taxpayer dollar that gets put into public higher education gets paid back seven times over. We put in $1, we get back $7 in return in revenues and public benefits. So when people try to guilt trip you about free public higher education, what you want to tell them is that there's no guilt here involved whatsoever, because this is actually a public good. This is an investment, the most important investment and the most productive investment that we can make as a society. And the same goes for that guilt trip about bailing out students locked in debt, because it was Wall Street that tore up that contract that was going to provide you with good jobs at the other end of your loans and your hard work getting your degree. Well, in fact, they tore up that contract when they crashed Wall Street, through their waste, fraud, and abuse. So there's no guilt here at all. This is a good thing. You don't throw your kids into the ocean without teaching them to swim. We shouldn't be throwing our younger generation into the economy without having the training and the skills that they need. And that means having a college degree, or at least 2 years of a community college degree, or a professional or technical school degree, so that people can actually swim in these very stormy waters of our current economy. We did this in the last century by paying for a high school education, which was free and is what people needed during their high school years. They needed that degree in order to survive in that economy of the 20th century. So to survive in this economy, people need and deserve a free college education. And there's more that we can do when we liberate young people to lead the way. We can create an emergency jobs program that will solve the emergency of the climate crisis. We call this a Green New Deal, like the New Deal that got us out of the Great Depression. But in this case, it fixes the climate crisis as well as the economic crisis. And it will create 20 million good wage jobs to be sure that everyone has a job, so that we can transform not only our economy, but our energy, our food, and our transportation system to achieve 100% clean renewable energy by 2030. So the Green New Deal will revive the economy. It will prevent climate catastrophe by achieving that 100% clean energy by 2030. And it makes wars for oil obsolete. And it pays for itself in healthcare savings from preventing a large portion of the diseases that are caused actually by fossil fuels. So that's like asthma and cancer and heart attacks and strokes. All that gets prevented, which saves us enough money that it actually pays to create those jobs for the clean energy transition. And there's another emergency that we can and must fix. That is to end the crisis of police violence and racist brutality against black lives. Just this week, our hearts are breaking once again with the latest cases of racism and violence, and that's the unprovoked violence against Alston Sterling and Philando Castile, who were both murdered, and the retaliatory violence against the police in Dallas, taking again 5 more innocent lives. All of this adds to that long list of tragic assassinations that includes Freddie Gray, Eric Garner, Walter Scott, Tamar Rice, Sandra Bland, and so many more. We can fix this, and we need to start doing something very different so that we can fix it, so we're not hearing about 2 more murders tomorrow and another one the next day and the next day. We need police review boards and full-time investigators to look into all deaths at the hands of police so that communities are controlling their police, not having police controlling their communities. And we must demilitarize the police and end this racist war on drugs. And we must invest in jobs and education, not war and incarceration. And to really change gears here and to really move forward, we need to be able to understand where this crisis comes from. That means we need to create a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to actually address the living legacy of slavery that brings these unconscionable racial disparities to virtually all dimensions of society. Not only police violence, not only the prison system and the criminal injustice system. It means in our jobs, the incredible disparities in jobs, in wages, in schools, in housing, and in health, because all of those disparities have real life and death consequences. So it's time to understand them, and it's time to fix them, and to affirm with both our words and our actions that black lives do matter. We can also create a healthcare system based on human rights that provides healthcare to everyone without cost at the point of service, built into the tax base in a progressive way, largely through a progressive taxes, through the income tax. And we can do that through an improved Medicare for All system. We can create a welcoming path to citizenship. And the most important thing we can do to end the crisis of immigration is to stop causing it in the first place through policies like NAFTA, through the war on drugs, and through invasions and CIA-supported coups and death squads trained by the School of the Americas here in the United States. We can stop overturning democracies and stop creating the flight of so many refugees coming to our country in order to survive. And we can create a foreign policy based on international law and human rights, not on military and economic domination. So this is the world that we can create outside of 2 corporate parties funded by predatory banks, by fossil fuel giants, and by war profiteers. So that means it's time to stand up and vote for what we want, not against what we fear. Because this politics of fear has delivered everything we were afraid of. All the reasons you were told to vote for the lesser evil, because you didn't want the massive bailouts for Wall Street and the offshoring of our jobs and the meltdown of our climate and the endless wars and the attack on our civil liberties and on immigrant rights. We've gotten all of that by the droves, and much of it under a Democratic White House with 2 Democratic Houses of Congress. And we got that because we allowed ourselves to be silenced, and because we accepted this role of being powerless, and because we let speak for us. When we silence ourselves, we create a moral vacuum into which the lesser evil and the political predators run, whether they're greater evil or lesser evil. It's a race to the bottom between the two of them. And in fact, the lesser evil paves the way to the greater evil because people stop coming out to vote for politicians who are throwing them under the bus, even if someone else could be doing it worse. People stop coming out to vote, and that's exactly what's happened as we've seen state house after state house and congressperson after congressperson flip from being blue to being red because people stop coming out to support a lesser evil party. And in fact, the surge of support behind Donald Trump itself is the direct result of the economic misery created by key neoliberal policies passed by none other than Bill Clinton with Hillary Clinton's full support. These are the policies of Wall Street deregulation that led to the 2008 crash, destroyed 9 million jobs, tricked 5 million people out of their homes. It brought us NAFTA, which exported another million plus jobs. So another Clinton in the White House will only fan the flames of the right-wing extremism supporting Donald Trump. The only way to truly fix this is with real progressive policies in a mass social movement with a truly revolutionary political party to lift up the voice of that social movement and to give it political traction. As Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand. Never has, never will. We must bring that demand into the political arena.
And you're tuned to WBAI in New York, Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein speaking on Facebook after the endorsement by Bernie Sanders of Hillary Clinton. Today on Thursday, July 14th, Dr. Cornel West came out in support of Dr. Stein. At this point in her Facebook conversation, she did a Q&A.
So the first question comes from Susan Wilkinson, who asks, if you are on the ballot in 20 states, how can the Green Party win?
Fortunately, we will be on the ballot in just about all of the states. When that statement was made, that's how many we were on in at that time. We have active drives that are going on now in virtually all the other states. There may be one or two where we may have to do a write-in campaign or where we are fighting legal suits to get on the ballot, but it will be just about all of the states. So you can rest assured, in the last race, we were on the ballot for 85% of voters. In this race, we expect to be on for about 95% of voters. So don't for a minute let them talk you out of the fact that we do have the power and we are going to use that power in order to take back the future that belongs to us.
What about the TPP?
Thank you, Tor. We are fighting the TPP, and it's another sign of our power that we've been able to delay the TPP actually for years, and we've even been able to force the politicians who've been supporting the TPP, like Hillary Clinton, to at least change her tune. But I wouldn't rely for a minute on Hillary to not change her tune back, because she has a way of doing it. So it's very important that we keep fighting it. There is a campaign going on right now to prevent the passage in the lame duck session by officials who are not going to be serving in the coming Congress. We don't want them to be voting on a bill that's going to be critical in determining our future. So there is a no lame duck passage campaign going on right now. You can find out more about that at Flush the TPP or at many of the other websites that are fighting the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This again is an example of our power. Let's use our power. We are going to stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Jill Clark asks, Jill, where do you stand on for-profit prisons?
Thank you, Jill. I am very much opposed to for-profit prisons. There is no reason that we should be privatizing and creating a profit incentive for the criminal justice system whatsoever. This is a very, as you know, it's a system based on injustice, a system of mass incarceration, and to be building profit into the incarceration of people is exactly the wrong thing to be doing. That profit motive has also been built into the detention centers where immigrants are sent, lots of women and children, in fact, who are fleeing the violence in Honduras, that is a result of the foreign policies of Hillary Clinton, who gave a thumbs up to the corporate coup in Honduras that ushered in that violence. Many of those people, the mothers and children, are actually being night raided right now by the Democratic White House with Hillary Clinton's approval. And they are being locked in these prisons as well, which, as you may know, Hillary Clinton accepts the donations from the private prison industry. So it's time to say no to private prisons. It's time to end the abuse of prison labor, of slave labor in our prison system. And it's time to use the criminal justice system for justice that is not for retribution, not for revenge, but actually for rehabilitation and to allow people to earn their way back into a just society that works for us all. And I should mention briefly, we also call for legalizing marijuana and treating the drug use like a health issue, a public health issue, not as a criminal issue. And I say this as a medical doctor, knowing that you cannot punish people who are desperate economically and socially. You cannot punish them into health. We need to help people into health. And truly preventing this drug crisis that we have requires not only treating it as a public health issue, but also ensuring that people have jobs and that they have a good school system that's actually preparing them for these jobs, not pushing them down the school to prison pipeline.
Gabby Vargas asks, what are your thoughts about the 10 million illegal immigrants?
Great. Thank you, Gabby, for asking that important question. So first, let me say I avoid using the word illegal about people, because people are not illegal. We may be born in different countries and subject to different kinds of pressures, but we are all human beings and we all deserve human rights. The 10 million or so undocumented immigrants who've come to this country are very much a part of our economy, they're part of our communities, and they are part of our culture, and a very thriving part of it. And let me acknowledge that we are all immigrants in this country, unless you happen to be a Native American, in which case there were other terrible injustices that you have endured, or you were brought here as a slave, as an African American. But everyone else, and those people, of course, have been done incredible injustice, but everyone else is an immigrant here. So it's a really arbitrary line that's being drawn to say that some people were legal and now others, you know, don't have a place here. Immigration has been a source of our diversity and a source of our strength and a source of our inspiration as a culture. What we have right now is a crisis of immigration created by the mass flight of refugees who are fleeing economies that have been destroyed, who are fleeing war, who are fleeing poverty, and who are fleeing violence. That issue needs to be fixed, and unfortunately, many of those crises are the product of extremely misguided and predatory U.S. policies. So those policies need to be fixed, and that's what I mentioned briefly in passing. We need to stop overturning other democracies, stop invading other countries, end NAFTA and other predatory trade agreements, and create fair trade agreements instead, and also end the war on drugs, which creates incredible violence that has also caused so many people to flee to this country. So we can stabilize this mass flight of refugees and ensure that we are helping other countries become just and sustainable places where people want to be. We need to be helping to stabilize the world. We should be a force for good, for humanitarian policies around the world, not for destabilizing other countries by seeking to dominate them economically and militarily.
Courtney Harold Barker asks, what do you think of marijuana?
Okay, so what do I think of marijuana? Thank you for that question, Courtney. As a medical doctor, what I can say is that marijuana is a substance which is dangerous because it's illegal. It's not inherently dangerous. Certainly, it's less dangerous than other substances that are perfectly legal, like alcohol and tobacco. So as a president, if I have the honor to turn the White House into a greenhouse, one of the first things that I will do under the executive power of the president is to instruct the Drug Enforcement Agency, the DEA, to do a really radical thing, and that is to use science in determining what substances will actually be listed substances and which won't. Because if science is used, then immediately marijuana and hemp come off of that list of illegal, highly regulated substances. I think marijuana has enormous potential as a grassroots form of economic development, as well as potential for therapeutic use and medicinal use, as well as nutrition and construction and manufacturing and paper and all kinds of things that can be done from either marijuana or hemp. Extremely useful raw materials that should be available to everyday people. And we need to be careful as we proceed towards legalization that we not simply empower this to be another resource for multinational corporations to take over. We need to ensure that marijuana and hemp remain resources for the grassroots economies, for everyday people to use them in a productive and safe and helpful way.
Letitia M. Carter asks, what will you do about police targeting minorities?
Great. Wonderful question, Letitia. And in this last week, we've seen the incredible tragedy of, you know, one shooting after another, and we've seen them up close and personal in the video footage that was narrated after the death of one of the victims of that police violence. So I think we're in a really powerful moment right now where the incredibly heart-wrenching experience of this last week really needs to be a springboard into a better way forward. So I think, number one, we need to be able to hold police accountable, and we need to make sure that it's communities running our police, not the other way around. So as I mentioned earlier, we need to have police review boards so that citizens are doing the hiring and firing, particularly of the police commissioners, so that they're actually accountable to the job that they are doing and that their police officers are doing. We need to ensure that there are investigators so that every death at the hands of police and in police custody is investigated, so that where there have been offenses committed, they are understood, and having a badge is not a license to kill. There needs to be accountability, whether one is wearing a badge, whether one is a police officer and carrying a gun but off the job, as just happened in this latest tragic New York killing on the 4th of July. The wearing a badge is not the right to kill. So we need to have accountability. We also need to change the culture of policing. And it's very important that we demilitarize our police and that we are training police in de-escalation so that they know how to reduce confrontation when it actually takes place. We need to have support personnel that the police can call in, mental health professionals, social workers, so that they can participate and provide the skills that police often don't have, because unfortunately, so many of these instances of police killings are people with mental health issues that have been locked out of our healthcare system that is not providing the support that they need to start with. So we need multiple services to be available at that point of conflict. We also need to explore what it means to disarm our police force, because as a society, we have become armed combatants, all of us. And in addition to police targeting, there are so many people who are just caught in the crossfire of guns. And if we're going to think about disarming people, we also need to think about disarming police. And what societies have found that don't have armed police, China, the United Kingdom, Norway, Iceland, and some of these places actually have a lot of guns. Citizens have guns and the police do not. And actually what we find is that the police are actually safer, is what these studies show, because people are less afraid. And so much of the shooting is actually triggered by fear. It's fear on behalf of the police, who are afraid that they're about to encounter a gun, and it's fear on the part of everyday people who are afraid that the cops have a gun and that they're going to shoot them first. So we are a society right now that is in this stranglehold of fear, and we got a whole lot of people who are shooting first, and it's just not working. So to get to the bottom of this, you know, we need a truth and reconciliation commission so we can get to the bottom of the legacy of racism that goes all the way back to slavery and lynchings and Jim Crow and segregation and redlining and all that, this continuous stream of prejudice. We need to understand it and come to terms with it. And we also need to come to terms with the fear and the armaments that have really created this society of armed combatants now. We're going to have to deal with both of those things if we really want to get a handle on this problem.
And you've been listening to Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein on the day that Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton. You can look on Facebook at Dr. Jill Stein for more of that conversation.